You're listening to a CNBC TV 18 podcast, and this is Smooth Ride. Hello and welcome. You're listening to a brand new episode of the Smooth Ride podcast. I am Alisha Sachdev. In financial year 2020-2021, when all segments of the auto sector were shrinking in volumes due to a brutal wave of COVID-19, one segment stood apart and continued to grow and grow. I'm of course talking about tractors. In fact, they grew at over 20%, which is the most the segment has grown in over a decade. And if you are mystified by this growth, this podcast is for you. My guest on the episode today is Ramesh Ramachandran, Senior Vice President Strategy and Farming as a Service at Mahindra & Mahindra. M&M's expertise in the sector goes back decades, and Ramesh has been responsible for starting up innovative business verticals within the farm equipment sector at the company. Now, in this episode, we discuss what made 2021 the bumper year it was for tractors, will we see anything like it again, and how technology like the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence was making its way to Indian farmers through these farming solutions. Listen in for what I dare say is something of a mini masterclass on the Indian farm equipment market. So thank you again, for taking the time out today and speaking to me for the Smooth Ride podcast. Fortunately, I've had the opportunity to discuss this with you before. The fact that the farm equipment sector is largely understood to be only about tractors. Naturally, given the fact that we've been hearing so much about tractors now over the last 1 year, the fact that this has been a record year in terms of sales. So clearly the discussion around tractors has, really come on its own this time. But you were explaining to me that India really has a long way to go before it can be mechanized to the levels that, global peers are. So can you start with that maybe and help me understand what the farm equipment space really entails, including tractors, but what it consists of besides that too, and how that space in its entirety is poised to grow as the industry and what you're doing at the Mahindra Group too?
Yeah, sure, certainly. So let me just start with some statistics, which will help put this in perspective. If you look at the global industry, the tractor industry is worth around $60 billion. Mm-hmm. But the farm machinery industry, which we define as all the equipment used on farms, excluding tractors, that industry is worth an additional $100 billion. If you contrast that with India, where the tractor industry is about $6 billion, the farm machinery industry in India is just about $1 billion. So mm-hmm. if you look at this, what you can clearly see is that there is a much higher level of tractorization that has happened in India compared to mechanization. Now, what's really going on behind this is the fact that if you look at a crop and what we call the crop cycle, i.e. from preparing the land, to sowing the land, to looking after the crops once they've started growing, to harvesting the crops, and then post-harvesting. If you look at that whole crop cycle, what you see in India is that there is a fairly high degree of mechanization in the land preparation phase, which is where the tractor is used to prepare the land, pulling a plow, pulling a cultivator, right, pulling a rotavator, that sort of thing. But as you go through the crop cycle, what you find in India is that the use of a tractor reduces for other parts of the crop cycle. Mm-hmm. And the use of machines for other parts of the crop cycle is very, very low. Most of it, a lot of it is done manually. So if you look at harvesting, for example, a lot of harvesting is done manually. If you look at crop care, for example, a lot of crop care is done manually. If you look at rice, for example, and you've probably seen these images traveling in trains as you leave a city of a lot of people sitting on their haunches and planting, transplanting rice. So it's very, very manual still. That's what we mean by mechanization, the substitution of what is traditionally used through people, traditional manual labor, substituted through appropriate machines that are convenient, and lead to more profitability. And that's what you see in other countries, especially in the developed Western countries, which I would argue are fully mechanized. And you see perhaps in some emerging countries like China and Brazil, which is much more mechanized than India is, and much less in India. So we see that as a huge, huge upside for the Indian industry, and specifically for Mahindra as well. Now, we at Mahindra please carry on.
You know, so before you actually explain to me, you know, how Mahindra will leverage this, you know, opportunity that you just described, I was curious to know, why is India actually behind on this mechanization? You spoke of tractorization, which has been happening. But what's really keeping us behind, you know, even emerging markets, you know, other emerging markets who have, in fact, moved significantly forward on mechanization?
Yeah. So, you know, like with all these things, you know, it is a combination of customer behavior, farmer behavior, combination of the role of the government in creating these types of opportunities, as well as, you know, some of the softer infrastructure, if I could put it that way, by way of financing and so on, and the availability of appropriate products in the Indian ecosystem as well. So it's a combination of, you know, making sure that we've got the right products available at the right price points with the necessary financing infrastructure, where relevant, support from the government by way of subsidies, and then also a go-to-market approach where one has the capability of educating farmers and showing them the actual benefits by way of profitability of using some of these equipment. So it's all these things coming together in a coordinated fashion that opens up these opportunities.
Right. And when this mechanization does happen, this would lead to higher yields as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So there's widespread evidence of a direct correlation between increased yield and farm mechanization, which of course in turn leads to other economic and social benefits for farmers. And, you know, we are seeing that, for example, with rice transplanters that we have been promoting quite aggressively in the last 2 to 3 years. So we know from the work that we are doing with our rice transplanters that if the process is adopted properly, then there is an income per acre increase for farmers of anywhere between 3,000 to 6,000 rupees per acre. And that is validated data that we are seeing time and time again when we are promoting our rice transplanters to the Indian farming ecosystem. So with the right types of equipment, you will definitely see an improvement in the farmer's income per acre. I mean, it's a globally established approach. And, you know, what we really need is for companies to take the lead, Indianize the product so that they work in Indian conditions, at Indian price points, like we're doing with rice transplanters, and then find a way to go out there, work on the field alongside farmers and show them the benefits. And that we feel is fundamental to opening up these market opportunities. And that's what we're going to be doing a lot of in the months and years to come.
Right. Interesting. So Ramesh, you were talking about how you see this as a big opportunity for the Mahindra group itself. So can you talk to me about, you know, the size of that opportunity? And when we speak of the farm equipment division at the Mahindra group, what is the size of this non-tractor, you know, market or portfolio that the group currently has? And what is the scope of the opportunity that you're really seeing going forward?
Yeah, so see, we are very bullish on this whole farm machinery business, as you might have inferred from the excitement when I'm talking to you about it.
Absolutely.
And we expect it to be a really sizable contributor to our revenue in the next 5 to 7 years. We've got a very strong pipeline of products, and we have a good legacy of introducing 3 to 4 new products every year. If you look at the last fiscal year, we grew by about 40, this segment itself grew by 45%. And, you know, we don't expect with the type of investments that we're making in this area that, you know, we will have the same type of margins as a very mature tractor market. But what we do expect is that it will drive growth of within the farm machine industry, an average 30 to 40% type growth in the upcoming years. So, you know, as Anish, our MD, has said in the past, we think that this is a very good equation for M&M as a whole business. So, you know, like I said, we think that India has a long way to go, given the ratio of tractor market size to farm machinery market size, which is 6 to 1 currently in India. Right. And we think that, you know, if even if it just becomes equivalent in size to the tractor industry market size, that's a 6 times growth that one should expect to see in the farm machinery industry. And as market leaders, you know, we'd like to take a large part of that.
Right, right. Fantastic. So it clearly looks as if there's going to be big visible changes in the, you know, in the way and even the even in the landscape that we see when we're taking our train journeys, you know. So let's look forward to that happening. But for now, let me come back to the centerpiece of this discussion, really, which is tractors. Sure. And, you know, talking about FY21, which was a record year, we did see some 9 lakh units in sales. And you were mentioning to me earlier, you know, that that really did get everyone fired up to even target to a million units in sales. So given the fact that these new challenges in the form of a second wave of COVID have come, you know, and in large part, we've also sort of the economy has sort of begun to restart. The rural, you know, side of the country was impacted a lot more this time, though. Do you see that target, you know, of a million units in sale, you know, has been sort of compromised a little bit given these challenges currently?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to put my finger on a number, but what I will give you is some flavor of how we're thinking about it. And if you permit me, I'll just spend a couple of minutes on what exactly happened in FY21 as well, which led to the, you know, this big bump that the whole industry experienced, including Mahindra. Now, there was a bunch of things, of course, part COVID-related, part not COVID-related, that helped FY21 be the bumper year that it was. If I look at weather, which of course is unrelated to COVID, we had an excellent monsoon. So we had the third highest cumulative rainfall in 25 years in FY21, with very good distribution, both temporally as well as spatially. It was the first time since 1960 that we had above average monsoons back to back. And of course, with good monsoons, the reservoir levels also are very good, which brings confidence to the farmers when they get into the Rabi season, which is exactly what happened. So in the Rabi FY21, they were confident because the reservoir levels were very high, and 74% of the districts had normal to excess rainfall. So I think weather was a very key contributor to the fact that FY21 was a great year. Now, let me come to the COVID-related factors, which helped FY21 be the year that it was. Now, first of all, because of the anticipated shock on the economy, the government was extremely proactive and recognizing the problems that would arise. They moved fast. And if you look at the bumper Rabi and Kharif output, they procured in a very timely fashion. And when that happens, as we all know, in the rural economy, the circulation of money is preserved. And the corresponding demand for tractors in the rural economy was supported by the fact that the money kept circulating in rural India. Also, the government had several other programs to coincide with this period, again, to support the rural economy in terms of higher fund allocation under MGNREGA, the PM Kisan scheme, the sixth installment of it. It extended the Pradhan Mantri Garib Kalyan Yojana, distribution of food grains to the poor. So a bunch of different things. I mean, the government went into mission mode and that really gave a fillip to the rural economy. Now, there was a third thing, which is probably less discussed, but quite interesting. And that is at the level of customer behavior. So what tends to happen in these unprecedented times is that in rural India, people tend to defer expenditure on things like house renovation, purchase of durables. Hmm. They save more because they don't know how much they need on medical emergencies. Marriage mm-hmm. season was very muted. So all this provides extra cash flow in the hands of rural India. And also you see the reverse migration of workers from urban areas to rural India. What that happens, right. when that happens, what tends to happen is that these people go back to their villages with their savings from urban India. And most of them have a connection to the agrarian economy, their own land, or their right. parents' own land, yeah. their brother's own land. So the cash flow improved, definitely. And that has helped the Indian tractor industry. And finally, I would say that if you look at states like Punjab, where there is no labor, the labor comes into Punjab from other states. The moment there was mm-hmm. this reverse migration during COVID, because agricultural yeah. activity still had to continue, farmers moved to mechanized solutions like rice transplanters or potato planters or super seeders and so on and so forth. So all these mm-hmm. factors really, they came together in a sort of very, very perfect fashion to drive the type of numbers we saw in FY21. Now, FY22, of course, is different and mm-hmm. perhaps in some ways similar. So I'll tell you where the difference, of course, is the fact that this time the second wave of COVID has been quite strong in rural areas. And the virus has spread in those areas. And no doubt, you know, people are getting affected and there are challenges. Many of our dealerships in the last couple of months have been shut in specific states because of local lockdowns. So walk-ins have reduced, et cetera, et cetera. Having said that, the agri-related factors are very positive because the monsoons have come early. There are very positive sentiments around the monsoons. Vaccinations are increasing. The second wave is peaking and we're hearing reduction in the number of cases. So we do think that demand will bounce back strongly if the cases continue to decline and the vaccination progresses fast because weather is conducive. And we also think that the government support will continue and the procurements have been good. So we think that there are many factors which actually carry over from last year to this year. Mm-hmm. But there are some factors which probably dampen it versus last year. So do we think we're going to grow 20% as we did last year? No. But, we think that a single digit growth here is quite possible.
Right. So, a bunch of very interesting takeaways from how you explained, what made FY21 the year it was for tractors. And it does sound counterintuitive to someone on the outside at first, that COVID did lead to improved cash flows in rural households. But it figures, as you explained very well, that there was this increased propensity to spend as people had been saving up due to cautious spending, on other things. So that clearly was a unique set of factors which came together to make it the year it was. And, there was a lot of buying activity for tractors which could take place. You've correctly said that there are some factors which would carry over into this fiscal year as well, in terms of the outlook as far as agriculture is concerned. But do you think that propensity to spend, and considering that a lot of spending has already taken place, in the last year, will that ever return in the medium term horizon, perhaps, to sort of, so that we can also see these numbers that we saw in FY21 again? Definitely not, this year, as you've said, you're expecting a single digit sort of a growth. But can that be replicated again? Can these factors, maybe come together, or would it be a different set of factors driving this sort of growth?
Yeah, so I mean, I'd probably take a step back to answer that question. And point out more to the fundamental structure of the industry in India. So I think there are a couple of things to note. One is the fact that the penetration of tractors in India is still quite far from any type of penetration that would match the levels in, say, the US or Germany or, you know, other countries in the Western part of the world, where pretty much everybody who needs or has to have a tractor has one. That's not the case in India. So there's a long, long way to go before India has the levels of tractor penetration that more developed countries have. And that upside is always going to be there. And if you look at the long-term average growth of the industry, you know, it is around 8%. So the growth is there in the industry. The opportunity is there. The demand is there to be unlocked. The question is, what is the trajectory to get there? It's traditionally a cyclical industry. We know that. And that's
absolutely. But
that,
you know, when we talk about penetration numbers in the long term, it definitely would look like a growth story. You're right about that. Yeah. But the year that we saw, you know, and the, you know, that's what I really, you know, I'm pointing to. Would we see a year like this anytime soon once again? And if we would it be driven by the same set of factors? Because these were a very unique set of factors. Or would it have to be something else that would drive this sort of, you know, record-breaking, as it were, sort of growth?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you have to sort of break it down into growth rate and the total number of tractors sold. So we definitely will see both in the years to come, because, you know, the industry has grown by these type of numbers in the past as well, and that will continue. And if you look at the number, I think that will definitely be seen, because, you know, like I said, we are far from being as big a tractor market as possible. Given the number of arable acres of land there is in India. So I think the answer is we will see it. Will we quite see it for the same combination of reasons? I don't think so, because, you know, COVID is hopefully not something that one sees again. Even though it was, you know, it ended up with a bigger market size. Circumstances were, you know, not that happy. And then, of course, you know, the other point, you know, like I was saying, Alisha, is that it's not just tractors. So the Indian growth story and seeing numbers at huge market size numbers is a full mechanization story as we are concerned. And, you know, we certainly want to play a leading role in ensuring that the industry grows not just in terms of tractor numbers, but in terms of numbers of all the other machines that help Indian farmers earn more per acre. So harvesters, rice transplanters, rotavators, balers, the whole lot. And that's really what's behind our global strategy. If you look at many of the investments we've made in Japan, in Finland, in Turkey, there's a very strong farm machinery bias to it. So Japan, for example, has now become our global center of excellence for lightweight tractors and agri machinery such as rice transplanters. And Finland has become a center of excellence for harvesters. Turkey has become a center of excellence for farm implements. So our idea is, through these investments, to create India appropriate solutions using some of the technologies that we've got our hands on, and use those products priced at the right point, you know, with capability of delivering in Indian conditions, in order to further this vision of growing the farm machinery in India disproportionately.
Right. So, you know, that brings me also to Krishi, which, you know, of course, is a digital, you know, sort of solution for better farming techniques for farmers. And again, earlier, you know, you did explain how things like, you know, artificial intelligence, IoT are not usually things we would associate, you know, with farmers or tractors or farmers actually, you know, using this technology. Correct. So can you explain that to me a bit more? You know, how do these you know, technological solutions come with the farm solutions that you offer? And again, how big of an opportunity or scope do you actually see in expanding this as you grow the business?
Yeah, certainly. So maybe let me just take a couple of minutes and tell you what Krishi is all about. And then I'll segue into, you know, what we think by way of the potential of all this. So Krishi is, it's a new business vertical that we started about a year or so ago, a little more than a year ago. And it is a value-added set of services that we are offering to farmers that helps them improve their income per acre. So it's very anchored in the whole notion of improving the farmer's income per acre. Now, in order to deliver a higher income per acre, there are three sets of services that Krishi offers farmers. One is related to agronomy. So agronomy related services. A lot of what we do there is phygital. So there's a physical piece to it where we take demonstration plots. We call them technique plots. And we have about 2,500 of them across India. And we want to scale them substantially in the months and years to come. And on these plots, we handhold the farmer and show them how they can improve their income per acre by adopting a package of practices that we have already validated. So we know that if the farmer adopts them, they'll increase their income per acre. And this would be a combination of agronomy practices as well as mechanization practices. So on these plots, we show them what to do. And in the last year, year and a half, we've seen, you know, anywhere between 3,000 to 12,000 rupees increase in income per acre across a set of crops across different regions in India.
What would this amount to in percentage terms again, this 12,000 to 17,000 increase that you spoke of?
Yeah, anywhere between say 10 to 25, depending on, you know, what the crop is, what the region is.
That's significant, yeah.
It is significant. It absolutely is significant. So we're very optimistic that this phygital approach. So there's definitely a physical piece to it where we work on the field with the farmer, interventions throughout the crop cycle. But at the same time, we have these apps, the Krishi app, which is packaging this advisory that we are delivering on the ground into an app format, and that we can scale and amplify much faster and in a much bigger way than we could do the technique plots, because physical activities always have a certain speed of scaling. So that's as far as the agronomy advisory goes. Then we have what we call mechanization services. Now, the mechanization services are really around ensuring that farmers who can't buy machines can rent them. So it's really a rental business model. So we've created these implement banks, these banks of machines at our Krishi dealerships. And from these dealerships, farmers can rent machines out so that even if they can't afford to buy a rice transplanter, they can rent a rice transplanter and leverage the benefits in terms of income per acre that a rice transplanter could provide. And similarly, we have a long set of implements that we offer in these implement banks. You know, it's in the context of this, Alisha, that I was telling you yesterday, that we also have, we're leveraging technology in a big way. So for example, it is to the rental entrepreneurs who help us with our rental models. Rental entrepreneurs, by the way, are farmers who rent machines out for a living. That's their business. They buy machines and then they rent them out. So they make income through rent. So for these rental entrepreneurs...
About how many such rental entrepreneurs would you have, and how many farmers using the Krishi service also at present?
Yeah, so it's, you know, in India, we if I look at the total rental entrepreneur market, you know, there's no detailed studies on how many there are, but, you know, there are probably, I don't know, in the range of about a million people who would be in the rental entrepreneur business, who would do this for a living.
Exclusive businesses buying machinery and renting them out, about a million of people like these.
Correct. Exactly. So, yeah, so we've got about 5,000-6,000 in the last year. And many of these are through our IoT service, which I was just about to tell you about. Rental entrepreneur can attach an IoT device to their tractors, and then using an app, they can remotely monitor various aspects about where their tractor is, how fast it's going, how is the driver driving, how much fuel does it have, how much work did the tractor do, et cetera, et cetera. Essentially, professionalize them as small business people. So we're using technology in many fascinating ways. And then the third area, which is directly in the area of technology. So agronomy services, mechanization services, and the third thing is digitization services. And that's where the really advanced tech of precision farming fits. And we're doing some very, very interesting things in this area. For example, in Punjab, we are working and have been working for the last 2 years with potato farmers to help them optimize their fertilizer consumption through a two-step process. In the first step, we help them map their field using sensors so that on their field, they know which part of the field is more fertile or less fertile. And then using that map, in the second stage of the process, we help them dispense fertilizer, where the fertilizer spreader or planter can read the map. So it's almost like attaching a USB stick to a kit that we attach to the planter, and that is able to read this map. Yeah. And then it dispenses fertilizer according to the map, you know, more where it's needed and less where it's needed. So this is called precision farming. And it's a combination of sensors, AI, variable rate technologies. We're also working with satellite technologies in a big way, which, you know, I can always sort of elaborate at another time, given the paucity of time on this podcast.
Sure. Right. Interesting. So, you know, again, all of these are tools, I mean, very innovative tools, but given the fact that farmers, I mean, there's always the question of accessibility, right? I mean, what would be the internet accessibility they would have there? So I wanted to get a sense of what the response has been to all of these new innovations, you know, from farmers. How comfortable do they feel using these apps or services independently also? And what is the potential for actually scaling these services? Because a large number of farmers, you know, we see the small, very fragmented sort of, you know, business it ends up being. So what do you see is the viability of these, you know, solutions for those kind of farmers also?
Yeah. So to be honest, we're as bullish about this as we are about, you know, the rest of the industry. And obviously, the million-dollar question is how fast will it get there to this world where there's a lot of digital technologies being used by farmers? And I think that different solutions will progress at different speeds. And where there is a very big physical element to the whole process, and you have to actually handhold a farmer and show them the benefits of it on the ground, that will progress at a certain speed, but progress it will. And where it is more dependent on, you know, maybe just the delivery of an app and putting that in the hands of a farmer, I think that would progress very fast. For example, we've got a solution called Krishi Nidan, where just using a phone, a farmer can take a photograph of a crop and instantly know what disease they have photographed. So that's AI in real time.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And now something like that is possible for very quick adoption across large parts of the country. Something where it's important that we handhold, show how the machine works on the ground. That might take a little longer. Of course, we're going to be doing everything anyway. Because for us, what is really critical are two things when it comes to Krishi. One is income per acre, and the other is a certain element of deployment. So we don't really want to be a brand or a company that just gives advice and moves on. We want to be a company that is able to help the farmer translate that advice into on-ground outcomes. So it's a very deployment-focused approach, and we think that is, you know, that's the only way to progress Indian agriculture. You've got to help farmers make the change, not just tell them what to do, but help them make the change. And that's why our on-ground presence, you know, for the last 50, 60 years and our 1,600 dealerships, all that comes into play when we have these types of ambitions.
Fantastic. It's really heartening to know there is so much going on, you know, almost behind the scenes, you know, because we always talk about tractors, but there is so much more that, you know, we don't really get to see as much. And so this was a very, very enriching conversation for me and such a pleasure talking to you today, Ramesh. So thanks once again for joining me on the podcast. And another time, I think we should definitely elaborate on the satellite technology that you mentioned. And I'm sure there's a whole other bunch of things to talk about too. But for now, thanks very much for this tractor and farm equipment market 101 for us. And I hope our viewers find it, our listeners find it as enriching as I did. Thank you so
much, Alicia. Thank you very much for having me on this. And you're right, I could talk for hours on this. So look forward to, you know, a follow-up.
Most definitely. Thank you, Ramesh.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Smooth Ride. As always, we'd love for you to send in any feedback, comments, or questions you might have for us or our guests at CNBC TV 18 podcast at nw18.com. I repeat, that is CNBC TV 18 podcast at nw18.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay safe and stay tuned in to CNBC TV 18 for all the latest news and updates.